We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get into today's show, I want to let you guys know about some exciting stuff that happened on February 29th, a day that happens usually only every 4 years. And we all know that February 29th is Tyrese Halliburton's birthday, which Fauci alluded to last episode where we wished Tyrese a happy birthday. But Caitlin Clark, Iowa standout. She is an incredible basketball player, the leading scorer in women's college basketball history, made her announcement that she is entering the WNBA draft. And oh yeah, the Indiana Fever are taking every bit of opportunity to play off of this hype that is going around right now. They're posting their ticket sales right now. They put a little hourglass up and said, you know, NBA draft coming up soon. And Caitlin Clark liked that tweet. So it's pretty exciting. Aaliyah Boston, last year Rookie of the Year, All-Star. Now Caitlin Clark. We might be looking at the WNBA's version of when the Magic had back-to-back picks in the 90s and they got Shaquille O'Neal. And they did take Chris Webber the next year, but they traded him for Penny Hardaway and got a ton of draft capital with that. So I'm just saying they're not going to do that with Caitlin Clark, obviously, but just the Penny-Shaq combo was so fun to watch in Orlando. And now we're getting the Caitlin Clark and Aaliyah Boston, you know, duo right there. So I call it the ABC squared combination. I'm excited to see how that plays out. So I know this is a Pacers podcast and that's about the Fever. It's a little bit different, obviously. We don't talk about the Fever too much on this show, actually hardly ever, but I thought it was worth mentioning just because about the amount of buzz that is going around, you know, the basketball world with Caitlin Clark officially entering the WNBA draft. So really cool on that end. But in terms of another Pacers-related news, former Pacers big man Scott Pollard, I'm sure you guys have been keeping up with his story on social media. He needed a heart transplant, and right around All-Star Week, I believe it was, he was able to get one. And so after 13 days, you know, post this heart transplant, he got to ring the bell today. So he's looking good. He's looking healthy. He's walking on his own, all smiles. And he was asking what song he should play when he rang the bell. His wife, Dawn, posted that. So just a really cool story for Scott Pollard to be able to kind of, you know, just beat the odds. There was a lot of doubt about what was going to happen with Scott. He needed a heart transplant badly. And so was able to find a donor and, you know, thank goodness for that donor being willing to donate their organs. And so now Scott Pollard has a new heart and he seems to be doing really well. So continue prayers for the Pollard family as he goes through this transition, but still really cool to see him back on his feet. So with that being said, we're going to bring on the Pacers pod father from Miller Time Pod back, you know, in the early 2010s, Dave Searle. He's retired from podcasting, but, you know, it was good for him to kind of dust off the old voice and get back on a pod. He's been on a couple different podcasts since the Siakam trade. I've heard him talking about the Pacers recently, so really cool to have him on our show, and we talk about this Pacers team, a little bit about All-Star Weekend and all that stuff. So with that being said, let's go ahead and get to Tyrese Halliburton and Chris Denari.
This is Tyrese Halliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line and hits again.
Memories have been made.
Halliburton, a deep three for the lead. And baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits the three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella. Fake shoots and hits.
But this This is Indiana. And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go! Go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping there. Team, we gon' need a mop. Setting like pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
All right, everybody, making his return to Setting the Pace. It's been a hot minute. It is the Pacers Podfather, Dave Sorrell. Dave, thanks so much for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. It's a wonderful time to be a Pacers fan. It was fun to get through All-Star Weekend. I will never quite have one like that again, I don't think. Obviously, being the hometown team and seeing how much they were all incorporated into that event was really fun, and getting around the city and all of that. And I still think there's a little bit of an afterglow on that with like kind of the team and the feelings around it. So it's a lot of good vibes for the good time to be a Pacer fan, I would say.
Mm-hmm, yeah, for sure. Were you at All-Star Weekend? Did you get a chance to experience any of that?
Well, a little bit. And so I took my son down, and they had advertised this like experience that was supposed to be with like 2K Sports, but also like anime stuff and like Japanese culture. And like my son likes Pacers and likes basketball, and he like loves like anime. And all of that was together in that description. So I was like, let's go down. We'll go check it out. It took us forever to get into the actual downtown area. We paid like $30 for parking. We waited in line and we got in this thing. And it was like this tiny room with like two little things to do. It was a very, very big letdown in that respect. So I was like, oh no, this is my son. We did all of this and it wasn't really that great. And so I said, well, let's just kind of try to walk around. And we tried to walk around Georgia Street, and it was like 20 degrees, and he was miserable. And there was like a basketball hoop. He's like, you want to shoot? He's like, I don't want to take my hands out of my pockets. And so we walked down to the arena, and we tried to go to the team store, and they're like, oh, we can't go until 4 o'clock. And so we're like, oh my gosh. So we just kept trying to do a whole bunch of different stuff. And we, my backup plan was to go to the, I forget what they called it, but in the convention center, they had the big exhibit. And you could buy tickets and like walk around and do stuff. And we were going to buy tickets in advance, but I thought, let's just go and scope it out. And if we want to do it, cool. And if not, then I don't want to pay the $60 or whatever it takes for us both to go. We get there. You can't tell where the line starts or begins. It takes us forever to even identify where the line is. And then we find out it's like 2.5 hours. Yeah. Of a wait just to get in the first place. And then you have to wait in 3-hour chunks. And then like by the time you get there, like this is ridiculous. So it was an awesome day with my son because he had such a good attitude about it. We actually had an amazing time like talking and hanging out. But the actual event, that part of it was a little bit of a letdown. So as far as like actually going on site, not as cool of an experience as I would have liked to have had. But you know, it was still cool having the energy around town and like the days and weeks leading up to it, seeing everything that they did downtown was pretty cool to be able to see. And overall, it was a real fun experience. So, but yeah, as far as in-person stuff, that was a little bit of a bust for us.
Do you think that the Pacers could have put on a better show? I felt like throughout All-Star Weekend, I mean, they really represented in, you know, each activity, Skills Challenge, Rising Stars, Halliburton in the All-Star game. I just felt like they were on full display all weekend, and I thought it was great for the nation to be able to see that.
Yeah, I think that it was clear how much they cared about it, and it seemed like they did a really good job of kind of seizing that opportunity. It seemed like anything that was involved at all with All-Star Weekend, someone from the Pacers was like there and representing the team and had a lot of energy. Tyrese Halliburton seemed like he was really enjoying just being the face of the franchise, doing all that sort of stuff. You know, it looked like on the skills challenge, they took it seriously. No one missed the route when they did the little dribble challenge part.
It's tough to watch the first two rounds where the other teams did miss that and had to go back. That was kind of embarrassing.
But they clearly really cared, and it made it really fun. And so, and you know, of course, Mathurin was very into doing the Rising Stars game, and everybody at every level that they participated in obviously brought it. It was fun watching the home crowd boo Lillard taking the final shots and getting the MVP despite taking what twice as many shots as Tyrese Halliburton did. But you know, they kind of get robbed of the MVP there a little bit, obviously. No, they really were prepared and ready to kind of seize on that as much as possible. Having the new LED court debut made that kind of a special one too. That was pretty wild to see. I didn't get there to like hit it with a sneaker. I'm surprised at the grip that it had. I was a little worried that the surface was gonna, you think that they'd spend a lot of money and time researching everything and making sure that it is up to game quality. But if you remember the synthetic ball, when the NBA tried to debut that, I'm sure they did a lot of research into that, but of course, but it wasn't enough, whatever it was, and they had to pull it mid-season. So you never know. You test something in a lab, and then you get some of the best athletes on the planet going all out at an NBA game for 48 minutes and sweating and all that stuff. You never know how that's actually going to hold up. So I was pretty impressed that that actually, worked well. It did help that they weren't really playing very hard. So
Yes.
I guess I don't know how that would maybe handle a playoff game, but at least I said playoff just now exactly like Jim Mora. That was kind of weird. I sort of channeled his spirit there for half a second, but having that as a debut was cool. But yeah, I mean the plaza around the arena. I mean they really stepped up, and I know they were really excited to get the All-Star game, and I think that the Pacers should be proud, both the players and the whole franchise. They really kind of capitalized on that as much as they could. That was really cool. They did a really good job. Even the uniforms look good. I'd
Yeah,
say
they
about
did.
two-thirds of the time they do not look good, and those uniforms are pretty sweet.
Yeah, these were much better than ones we've seen recently in the past. So I agree with you there. And it was exciting. And I saw a report today that said that they love the way that Indiana hosted, and so they're going to be looking to have more bigger events in Indiana to host. So that does speak volumes to just how good of a job the city does, especially being in the Midwest. So we're going to move forward now from All-Star Weekend and kind of look forward for the rest of the season with this team. And obviously, they've played a few games now since the All-Star break, but I'm kind of curious your thoughts on how you've seen Halliburton return from this injury in the play of late, because to me, he's not still 100% there, but I've felt like he's getting there. He's getting better. We're seeing flashes of it, just not enough at a consistent rate in terms of what he was doing before. But just curious your thoughts on his overall play since the injury.
Yeah, no, definitely not all the way there by any means. And I do sort of suspect, when they keep hammering away as he has, and a lot of players have at the sort of the 65 game rule, I do sort of suspect that they maybe came back a little bit earlier than maybe he should have in order to kind of hit that requirement a little bit. And knowing that a hamstring injury like that, as long as you manage it well, it is possible to play, but at kind of a reduced level. So I think we've sort of seen a little bit of that happening. I don't know how much of that would have happened if that rule wasn't in place, but I do kind of suspect it was maybe something of a factor. So we're sort of watching him kind of get into game shape in real time a little bit. And not only has that affected a little bit of burst, but when you don't have that burst, some of the more ingenious things that he is able to do on a night in, night out basis, it's just kind of not there because, it's a little bit easier to play defense on him when he doesn't quite have that burst every single time that he makes a move. And it's just been a little bit easier to kind of keep him in check. And a little bit of rust, I think, even happens to some of the tougher shots that he gets near the rim, just don't seem to be falling nearly as well as they did before. And it's tough to keep a defense on its toes when it thinks, okay, until he really proves that he's all the way back, we can kind of let him go a little bit. We don't have to be as afraid of him driving. It's hard to hit clean step back threes when you're not as afraid of somebody blowing by you. So I think that a lot of that has affected his game. And, you know, he is really good at reacting to a defense and, you know, fighting the little seam to make a great pass. But if that seam isn't there because the defense is worried, you have a little bit of a few of those opportunities. So just seeing a lot of that, it was really cool at the end of, you know, this most recent game, seeing the Pacers, seeing Halliburton kind of at the end really hit that step back three, start breaking down the defense a little bit. You saw a little bit of that right at the end of that game, and that was a good way to kind of kick off hope that maybe they're going to turn it around a little bit there. But, yeah, it's clearly not 100%. Hopefully it's just a matter of time. And I think that, you know, maybe we're just getting a little bit more of a peak of a less than 100% Halliburton that we might have at a different time. It's just time will tell. I'm not a trainer. I'm not a medical specialist. Is him playing through this going to be something that makes it so that he never quite gets right until the offseason? I have no answer to that question. I have no way to know it. But hopefully, you know, in the next month or so, we'll gradually see him get back to 100%. Because obviously, that's without him being 100%, the Pacers don't really have a lot to do in this offseason, I don't think. Yeah, offseason, postseason, of course, in the postseason.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that obviously, you know, he's the key to the Pacers' success. But even if Tyrese is not 100%, even over the last three games where his scoring hasn't been what it's typically been, still 30 assists to just three turnovers. So it's been awesome. True magician with the rock in his hands. But moving over to someone, the big splash of this this season, Pascal Siakam. When the Pacers added Siakam, it was a big deal. What has been, you know, your vibes on that early fit with Siakam and this Pacers group?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the thing that I was most excited about with Siakam, and the thing that two things that I think would help them grow the most beyond the fact that he's just an impact player at a position that they needed the most help at. I mean, that's like one of the best things that you can do, take your weakest position and add a two-time All-NBA player. I mean, that's obviously going to pay dividends no matter what you do. One of them, obviously, you know, on defense, his ability to impact on the defensive end. You know, whether that's being able to muck up passing lanes and as a help defender, or occasionally, as we've seen, one of their biggest weaknesses is just, you know, very dominant guards being able to just kind of rip through the Pacers. Maybe not all game being assigned as a stopper, but maybe one or two possessions at the end of the game trying to make those stops. They don't have a lot of options when it comes to that. And then, you know, hopefully he can make an impact in that area. But also it is his ability to make tough buckets. And again, kind of illustrating this at the end of that Pelicans game, you know, Halliburton hit him with a pass in the lane. He wasn't that open. He had a seam, but he wasn't that open. And he had to make a really tough bucket kind of falling off to the side. The ability to hit tough shots like that is just so crucial to their development, not just as a team that can, you know, maybe get in the mix for the 4 or 5 seed, but get in the mix for higher seeds and to win playoff games and win playoff series. They're that kind of defense where they're really focusing on Halliburton. They're bringing hard traps and they play a higher level of defense. You're just going to see a much higher percentage of that in the playoffs. And when that happens, you're just not going to get open buckets all game long. It's just never going to happen. There's always going to be stretches where it bogs down and it gets mucked up. It's not the 90s. This is the Pacers Pistons, but there's going to be moments like that. And those are going to be the ones that decide the game. And the Pacers are a little bit short, or had been, at guys that could finish off of Halliburton passes when there wasn't a lot of daylight. And so that's where Siakam, I think, is most exciting to me. The all-around offensive game does help keep the engine running, but late game, being able to create mismatches and exploit them and hit tough buckets, very big if the Pacers want to win big games. They need that. And that's the thing that I'm most excited about that he brings to the table.
Yeah, I agree with you completely, and I felt like the Pacers were kind of missing that 1-2 punch. You just were never really sure who Halliburton's number two is going to be, and now you clearly know it is Pascal Siakam. And so that's the big thing here. And then as they continue to grow together this season, it's been a pretty small sample size of what they can become. So I think that that's still exciting because they're continuing to figure each other out. But another player that I think has a ton of potential, but he's been on such a roller coaster of a season, is Benedict Mathurin. It's definitely been, you know, highs and lows. And even in games, he has highs and lows too. It's not just like a game-to-game thing. It's just like a possession-to-possession thing. So what have, you know, you noticed from Mathurin this year in terms of growth? And maybe what are your projections for him moving forward?
Well, in growth areas, I mean, I think, you know, being able to navigate on defense is something that has kind of come and gone with him. That continues to keep getting tightened up, and he's making fewer and fewer mistakes. I think natural growth of a player of his age. I would love to see him be more consistent on that end and be a kind of guy that you can maybe be a one-on-one stopper, but, you know, we've got a little ways to go there. So, but also, you know, his ability to pass definitely is improving. So I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that you can just give the ball and create 10 assists a game, obviously. But, you know, just making the simple pass with somebody that's that athletic and someone that can slice into the defense and score tough buckets, you're just going to inevitably leave players pretty wide open. And just being able to recognize that and deliver simple passes, I always kind of call it Dwayne Wade passing, where, you know, he had a lot of assists per game, but he never really made, like, magical. You never have like this Halliburton-esque highlight reel. You're like, oh my God, I can't believe he did it. I mean, unless he's just like whipping it the entire length of the court, you know, it's really about him just completely putting enormous pressure on defenses and then just dumping it off to the guy that's open. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that Mathurin needs to be able to do consistently to be able to continue to kind of really make an impact and be part of like a starting lineup ecosystem rather than just a lone wolf kind of coming off of the bench. And so he's doing it. He doesn't do it every single time, but there's been very simple passes. Of course, we saw the Rising Stars like behind the back pass. That was behind the head. That was pretty cool. But, you know, it's a little easier to do and the defense is a little lax. But, yeah, just he still misses plenty. But, you know, there are times where there's a simple double off the Miles Turner and he makes a simple double off the Miles Turner. So it's you don't need a miracle there. But you just need someone that's going to be able to make those simple 2, 3, 4 plays a game to be able to keep the ball moving and exploit it when defenses pay too much attention. It does seem like he is he got a good whistle earlier in his career, and he was hitting like so many crazy kind of circus shots inside. It felt like defenses had to get a little heavier on him. It seems like he's maybe struggling a little bit to kind of hit those toughest shots against defenses. And I do feel like defenses are standing back a little bit on him, not being quite as aggressive. And I think he does have a little bit of reestablishing of you just can't stop him when he gets inside and he gets any sort of room. You have to risk a foul Needs to get that back a little bit, but I mean, he's just young. I mean, there's a lot to process. There's a lot of growth that he's been trying to make, and you know, he's, like you said, gonna have ups and downs. But you know, I'm sort of almost avoiding the question of projections because I think it's just hard. Exactly how far he's going to go as a player, what kind of player he's going to be. I think that, you know, you would be thrilled with like a truly kind of plus starter that could be very valuable in the playoffs. Again, same way with Siakam, where, again, he's a tough bucket maker, you know, and you need guys like that if you really want a win. He is another guy that can develop that if he can do it consistently. That is going to be a tier of value above a guard that can shoot a lot and play solid defense. There's guys like that. It's not as easy to find guys like that as maybe people think, but still, those are placeholders. If you want to have guys that are going to be difference makers, then you need guys that are going to be able to have the abilities that Mathurin has. Man, ceiling. It's just tough. I just don't want to say anything. It's if you want to say a name, I mean, like, he might never make an all-star team. He might make five. I mean, it's just it's hard to say at this particular point. But, you know, it feels like the areas where he needs growth are growable places. You know, like, there are things that you can develop. And, you know, plus starter in the league, one of the strongest, you know, 3-4 guys on a team night in, night out. I mean, I think that still seems very much in play for Mathurin. It might even be true on the team right now. Whether he can go up and get to that all-star level, I'm less optimistic about that than I was his rookie year, I would say. I think he might settle into something where he's just shy of all-star level as a ceiling. That's where it kind of feels like to me right now.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, when you mentioned that just shy of an all-star level type of player, I think of
a guy
ceiling, like,
as a ceiling, yeah.
Yeah, and I think of a guy like Monte Ellis, had a lot of good years in this league, was never an all-star, but was a very good player. I think coming into this year, I think a lot of us thought that Mathurin could take that bigger step to an all-star. I think that at times we've seen flashes, but I don't think that anyone feels that his ceiling has risen from last year, because I think last year as a rookie, very, very promising now. Still don't know, is he a starter? Is he coming off the bench? But transitioning over to another guy in his class, Andrew Nembhard. Andrew Nembhard, since coming into that starting lineup, I think has been a great fit for the Pacers. He's been able to help them out defensively. Also been able to give them some good stuff offensively. But do you feel that he's the ideal starter at the two for the Pacers moving forward?
For the season or for as a franchise?
Well, for this year, we'll say.
Okay, for this year. Yeah, because I think I have kind of two different answers on there. You know, he really reminds me of George Hill in so many different ways. And the fact that he doesn't have really a ton of flash to his game, but he's just an all-around kind of combo guard-esque sort of player, I guess that you would say. Someone that's just always making smart plays on both sides of the ball. Someone that I kind of trust more than maybe some other players like Mathurin, that I think has more talent overall, but someone that immediately I would trust in a winning situation game in, game out. And so I think he can hold down that two-guard spot. And You know, that would be my my favorite in the clubhouse right now, to be the starter in the playoffs, just because you just feel like you can rely on him. And having Mathurin be a little bit more of a, assuming that, you know, we get Neesmith back, but, you know, having coming off the bench a little bit and then maybe starting in the fourth quarter or starting at the end of games of kind of situation, having him, Nembhard kind of hold that spot until, you know, maybe Mathurin had to come in at the end. That would be the way that I would say it. I didn't think that was going to happen. It's just, it still, to me, remains Mathurin's job to take. You know, we talk about the consistency and we talk about the growth. If he can hit those good games more frequently and keep that up, then he does have a chance to get that spot. And, you know, use the word ideally. Ideally, it clicks for Mathurin, you know, and he takes off with it, you know. That would be, to me, the ideal. But, you know, he's young. He's got plenty of time to develop. I wouldn't be that worried if he's not ready to go seize it right now. And I do kind of foresee that he would be the starter in the playoffs right now as it stands. But, you know, hopefully Mathurin does come take it from him.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the big reason why Mathurin has yet to take it from him is just because of the consistency on defense. You know, Nembhard is easily the Pacers' best point of attack defender. And I know Caitlin Cooper talks about it all the time. He does a great job of getting skinny during screen navigation. So very, very talented in that regard and just a much better secondary playmaker. He's more of a natural guy that doesn't have a problem playmaking. And I think that just kind of makes it more of a seamless fit right now next to Tyrese. Neither of them have been lights out shooters either. I feel like the floor spacing would be huge from both Mathurin and Nembhard if they could really keen in on that, like Buddy was so good at being a floor spacer. But, you know, it's just going to take time for them to figure things out. But I agree with you. I think Nembhard for this season for sure is the best option they have with the roster as currently constructed. But, you know, I am kind of curious with how it is currently constructed, how deep do you think this team can go in the playoffs? Because they've got a pretty talented squad. They can compete with the best of the best, but what is that ceiling in terms of how far they can go?
And you say him getting a skinny on screens. Once again, the ghost of George Hill haunts everything that he does. You know,
yes.
Such a clone in him in so many different ways. As for the playoffs, I would say that the cap would be, I think, going as far as they can without meeting Boston or Milwaukee. You know, I think as long as they avoid those two teams, then I think that they are winnable in any round. And that is not to disrespect what the Cavaliers have done. I would favor the Cavaliers in this series. But I think that those two teams in particular, because of, you know, the strengths that they have, in particular, just dominant wings that the Pacers have no answer for, you know, those are, they've been playing great basketball. They've war tested through many different playoff battles, and then have that ace that is like the biggest weakness that the Pacers have. It would just be, I think, very difficult for me to imagine them taking either of those teams down in a playoff series. But I do think that they have a shot against anybody else in the East. And for some teams, I think that they would be, you know, the favorite. But a lot of teams, it is a little bit more, you know, of a coin flip. Maybe you give it an edge to Cleveland. Obviously, something's clicked with them. They've been playing really great. And so that would be the one I'd be the most concerned with. But anybody else, I mean, I just seem that think that the Pacers have at least a 50-50 chance. And so, you know, it's I think it will be good playoff series, whatever happens to them. I mean, if for some reason they get a really bad matchup and they end up going down in the first, I think it will still be like a 6-7 game series with several very, very good games. But I do foresee, I would be surprised to see them not make the second round in this particular year. And then it would just be a matter of what team they ended up getting and maybe, you know, the tough out in the second round. You know, I think that sometimes people can be sarcastic about that, but some of the best series I've ever seen the Pacers play have been second round series, you know, against the Knicks or, you know, whoever it may be. You know, for me as a basketball fan, I just want to see great basketball. You know, I want to see teams play at a high level. And that's one thing that I feel very confident about unless there is just, you know, the Halliburton injury hangover just never gets shook. I do feel like the Pacers are going to be in very good form in the playoffs. We've just seen them come out of the gates so well. We've seen them, obviously, in the in-season tournament. We've seen them turn it on and play great games. I do feel very confident that this particular squad will step up in playoffs and play very good basketball. And I'm really looking forward to that element of it. And if the matchup gods are kind, then I think that they can go pretty far. Tyrese Halliburton hitting step back threes at the end of games. You got a guy that could do that, then you can kind of win any game.
Mm-hmm. I do think that this team has been battle tested throughout the year, whether it's the in-season tournament, whether it's just, you know, playing up to the competition in terms of the league's elite. Sometimes they've also played down to the competition, but I do think that they have had many tests throughout the year. So hopefully when going to the playoffs, it's not a, well, you know what, we've never even been in this type of atmosphere, because they haven't. But I do think that in-season tournament gave them a good taste of, we can hang with the elite of the East. And going to the second round, I think at this point would be, you know, a major win for this franchise that has not been to the second round in quite a few years now. But for my last question for you, I would just say, what's been your impressions of the 2023 draft class for the Pacers? And would I have absolutely shocked you if I told you that Ben Shepherd would be the one that would be making a bigger impact this season than Jairus Walker, of course?
No and yes. I think it would be more about, I mean, I am not impatient when it comes to developing like a 19-year-old. I know that Jairus is 20 now, but, you know, he's obviously very young. I've seen enough flashes from clips, whether he's been playing in college or in the G League, or the scant minutes we've seen with the Pacers. There's been enough that I've seen that I think, okay, you can see the talent. You can see, especially when it comes to like the passing vision, when it comes to making kind of special plays on defense. I see that in him. And so that doesn't make me very worried. And I know that this is a team with, you know, they do struggle with consistency from the wings, but there's still a lot of good players on this team and it's hard to get minutes. And so I'm not too concerned about, you know, letting him experiment while the team is trying to win games. He clearly needs a lot more seasoning when it comes to consistency and being able to kind of read offense and defense on an NBA level. Every minute that he's out on the court. That has been surprising to me. With Ben Shepherd, if you had said that, it wouldn't have been as surprising, but I would have just assumed that he would be just be on fire from three-point range. Like, this would be someone that came in and be, and was like an instant sharpshooter. The fact that he's come in and been like this sort of energy guy that's making an impact on defense first, that is a big surprise to me. I had no idea that that was going to be sort of a strength to his game. And, you know, that is kind of a different form. He's almost taken like a miniature a career arc like like Nesmith did, you know, where he was also a guy that came to the league that was advertised as a wing sharpshooter and kind of came out and, you know, obviously with Boston, but when he came to the Pacers, really started carving out minutes because of his energy and effort and ability on defense. And then the shooting started to kind of come later as a backfill. And so it's a bit of an accelerated version of that, but we're sort of seeing that out of Shepherd again, which is great. I'll take two of them. That's for sure. That's been nice, but not just energy, man. I've just seen some individual plays where he's just gotten right into someone's space and then stopped when it was time to, you know. And so many, you see guards that get excited and they, you know, they get up in someone's space, but all they have to do is do a quick fake and then they get to the line on a foul. He's just been so good at just kind of knowing when to attack and knowing when to back off. And that's a hard skill to get, and kind of an underrated one, I think. But he really has that. So they made a big find there. That is another kind of, I mean, with Nembhard, I mean, obviously they drafted him with Nesmith. You know, that was a trade. Another guy that they have put in very low talent capital in, that they've been able to get good productive minutes out of in the wing. They seem to be having kind of a good eye for that over the last few years. And so nice to have a good stockpile of those players because, you know, they were – the wing cupboard was pretty bare a few years ago. But he's been really awesome and fun to cheer for. And with Walker, I mean, it's just hard to have an impression, you know. Mm-hmm. You can dissect G League footage as much as you want, but until he gets to a point where you can see him on an NBA court consistently getting minutes, it's hard as an outsider to say much. I still like his talent. I think that they kind of gave him even more breathing room to develop with the acquisition of Siakam. You know, the need for him is a little bit less urgent. And it's hard to say. It is nice that they don't necessarily they're not desperate for wing players in the sense that, you know, not having them out there is crazy, but they also would love to see him come out and develop quickly because an impact wing would be a big deal. So, you know, kind of a TBD with him. They can't afford to be patient with him. But I really hope to see him take some big strides probably next year because they could really use another player with that skill set for sure.
Absolutely, Dave. And so as we wrap things up here on the pod, we have the last couple of, I would say probably like the last week or so, we've had some nice conversations about food takes in terms of sauces. And so
sauces. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know if you're a Chick-fil-A guy or you're a Buffalo Wild Wing guy or not, but we did a sauce draft for Chick-fil-A sauces. And then we also did one a couple days later with Buffalo Wild Wing sauces. So Obviously we're not going to do a draft tonight, but I'm just curious, maybe what are your top two sauces for, you know, at Chick-fil-A and maybe at Buffalo Wild Wings?
I'll tell you what, I'm not a huge fan of either restaurant, but I do love wings, you know? Okay. And so we're talking about sauces on chickens. And one take that I have that always gets a good reaction is that I think that like buffalo for wings is one of the like lower tier wing flavors, you know, it's like the first one, but I'm not a big fan of Tabasco, like the flavor of Tabasco. I like a lot of hot sauces, but not Tabasco as much. Not my preferred flavor. It's not bad. Buffalo chicken dip is still pretty great. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But as far as wings go, garlic parm is a flavor that I like a lot. It doesn't necessarily have a lot of heat, but I just think it goes really well with a good chicken wing. I do like teriyaki kind of flavors. And you know, if you mix in, there's a lot of different names that people use for this, but you know, like soy sauce and like honey and sriracha, and you kind of mix that together, that kind of flavor is a good wing. I mean, it just depends on where you're at on that, how you end up getting that name. Lemon pepper is one of my favorites. You know, where I live in the rich northern suburbs of Indianapolis, there's not that many places to get lemon pepper wings, but I wish that there were more. And whenever they do, I'm obviously very excited. But I wish I had more lemon pepper access. That would be a way to improve my quality of life. But those are some of my favorite kind of go-to chicken wing flavors if they're available.
Yeah, I was going to say, you were speaking my language from what I drafted. Parmesan garlic was my second pick.
Nice.
I closed it out with lemon pepper as my last pick.
There you go.
I took Asian zing first, which kind of felt like what you were describing.
Yeah. That would be, that's, I'm sure that is that version of it for sure.
So it just seems like I dominated Focci in this draft based on your takes, Dave. So
hey, based on what you enjoy, you know, I had some different ones. I can't even really remember which ones I had.
Mango habanero, honey barbecue, teriyaki. You did have teriyaki, so you did have one of these.
Yeah, I did. There was some sort of buffalo in there. It might have been like mild buffalo or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of those
mild.
I've still never had lemon pepper wings, so I do got to get around to it because now you know that's twice this has come up in the last week, so I'm gonna have to get some lemon pepper wings pretty soon. I'm sure I can find a spot near me.
Yeah, and another flavor that's awesome that specifically at Big Lug here in Indy, they have like Nashville wings. you know, and they
that was
like,
one of my that was one of my
that choices. Was your last pick.
That was my last pick. So
yeah.
Now all of a sudden we might be swaying them a little bit.
I don't think so.
Too bad. So.
Oh, but more importantly, like if it, what do you dip them in? And if you get a dip, what do you?
I like ranch and blue cheese. I like both. I ask for both. I'm that guy. You know, sometimes they're like, all right, well, we might have to charge a little extra. I'm like, just throw it on the bill. All right, throw that extra quarter on there. You know, because I want the sauce.
I'm a ranch guy through and through, Dave. I love ranch.
No blue cheese.
It's not my thing. I've tried it.
Oh man. Oh man.
It's just not my thing.
I think Alex's sauce has started out pretty hot. Dave, I could be wrong. I really do think, you know, we're starting to hit it off on these sauces together. So
you're pulling. I appreciate the sales pitch, Foch, but you're still
neck and neck right now. So
I always like to ask the blue cheese question because, you know, a lot of restaurants will basically take some ranch dressing and throw some lumps in it, and then they'll be like, it's blue cheese, check it out. And yeah. So like there's a
sometimes
lot of places.
You can't even tell the difference. You know, sometimes it's like,
yeah,
I don't really know what this is. And that clearly means their blue cheese stinks.
If you dip in both, yeah, exactly. And so, like, that was one, like, no offense to Buffalo Wild Wings, but that's one of those places where they might just kind of like stack them both up and just put a R on one and a B on the other and just kind of hand them out. But like a really good, true blue cheese dressing is amazing, and you know what, if you give me an elite blue cheese and then I also have to get traditional buffalo sauce with that, that's fine with me. That's worthy.
I'm right on board.
I would say, and, you know, it's and sauce rocks, but I still maintain technique of cooking the wings is the most important part. I mean, if you get a place that can nail the cook of it, then you can almost kind of throw anything you want on it. I mean, you could just dry up a little bit of salt and pepper on it, and then I'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes a sauceless wing is just the best wing if it's smoked correctly.
That's right. And, you know, it's smoking wings, obviously, that's a whole other story that can get a lot of elite flavors out of wings, too. But, you know, you got to, like, toss the sauce and immediately serve it.
Yeah.
If you don't do that, then I don't want to eat your wings. You know, like sometimes you'll see a place and then you'll just sit there for 15 minutes. And then you spend all that. I mean, maybe you didn't, but all that time getting that perfect crispy outside skin and getting that juicy center. And then it's all gone because you just let that sauce just deteriorate all that cook that you put on the outside. You know, that's where the dry rub comes in. If I don't trust you on your sauce delivery methods and just give me a dry rub.
No, I respect it, man. So, well, I want to thank you again for coming on and not only talking pace with us, but talking a little sauce and wings with us. It's always fun to throw in some food conversation on the show, especially since we're doing this daily. We always try to add a little bit more fun content to it besides just basketball. But go ahead and let everybody know where they can find you at on social and plug anything you'd like to plug.
You can find me at Miller Time Pod on Twitter, I do mortgages now. If you're buying a house, send me a message. I'm happy to help you out.
There we go.
Not as cool as plugging a Pacers podcast, but you know you gotta do what you can to keep the lights on.
Absolutely. Hey, Dave, we really appreciate you coming through, and we look forward to having you back on.
Cheers, guys. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.